And we're back. Doug Brown here on Unusual Sources with Brendan today. And for the second half of our show, we're going to look at the province-wide strike of our community college workers. And I've got on the line someone involved in this, Kevin McKay. Kevin McKay is vice president of OPSU Local 240. He's a professor at Mohawk College. And anyways, Kevin, are you there?
I am. Thanks, Doug.
Okay. Well, Kevin, this is what, about the 10th day of the strike?
It is, yes.
Yeah, and it's getting a lot of news coverage. And, of course, you know, various, I mean, there's an enormous student population in our community college system. About how many students are there?
When you combine full-time and non-full-time, it's actually over 500,000 students.
Wow. So you got those 500,000. Then you have all their families and so on. So, you know, there's an enormous impact, quite a bit at stake. And what's really, I think, at stake is the quality of education that they are receiving.
Definitely.
And we've got great faculty at our community colleges. But, you know, there definitely are things that need to be changed. What really astounded me was the number of college professors, instructors, counselors, librarians that are in a precarious employment situation. They are not full-time employees.
Yes, exactly. I think we were... you know, we've been tracking this for a few years at college faculty. In 2014, I wrote a report on the college system called the Report on Education in Ontario Colleges. And I visited all 24 colleges, spoke to faculty at each college. We looked at staffing information from all of the different institutions. And in 2014, when we crunched the numbers, it was about 67% of the faculty in the system were, like you said, precarious, non-full-time. When we did the most recent calculations, so just based on all the positions, all the people in the system, it's actually now over 70% are precarious, non-full-time. And, you know, this is something that we're experiencing on the ground. You know, anecdotally, everyone is talking about how there's fewer and fewer full-time faculty in programs. Some programs now are run with no full-time faculty, just all part-time precarious workers. So it's a real, you know, I think we're calling it a crisis, and I don't think that's overstating it.
Yeah, I quite agree. In fact, you know, the statistics just astound me. I don't know how the colleges can operate that way. You'd think that the majority of staff, and then some positions, pretty well all of them, would be full-time. You know, thinking of positions like counselors and librarians.
Yeah. So I'll just give you an example. You're right, Doug. This is actually, I think what folks in Ontario don't understand is just how far out of whack this staffing model is. So I'll just give you a few points of comparison. If you look at the British Columbia colleges, they have colleges very similar to the ones that we have in Ontario. And their faculty are represented by, it's called the Federation of Post-Secondary Educators. And they represent 19 different institutions, including colleges just like ours, and about 10,000 members. So they're very comparable to us in Ontario. So we have about 12,000 members in OPSU. And in the BC colleges, it's about 75% full-time to 25% non-full-time. And in fact, in the larger colleges, in the larger urban centers, it's close to 90% full-time faculty and then about 10% non-full-time. So that's just one example from sort of our colleagues in BC. If you look in Ontario at secondary school teachers and elementary school teachers, at the elementary level, it's about, you know, 77% full-time. And it's about 70 to 75% at the secondary level, at the high school level. So we are completely out of whack in the colleges. We really have sort of a complete inversion of what seems to be the accepted stable staffing model in other education sectors.
Yeah, and you wonder how the employer can accept having such a high proportion of part-time and precariously employed staff.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting, Doug, because what it really leads to is chaos, like on a semester to semester basis. And this is why we think one of our key demands, which is no cost, which would be just give part-time folks some job security, give them 1-year contracts and seniority, the ability to plan ahead. This would actually help the colleges, because what happens now is there is a last-second rush every semester to fill courses. And you have part-time faculty. These are people with skills, experience. They're committed. That's not the problem. But they're given their course assignment sometimes days before the course starts, sometimes days after the course has already started. And I can remember being part-time as a professor and doing the same thing, going into a course halfway through the first week, because the staffing model is it's gone far beyond flexibility to literally just instability, and so it's unreal. And I think part of how it sustained itself is that you've had full-time faculty members kind of repeatedly throwing their bodies on the grenades of poor staffing decisions and poor management decisions, and they're just trying to make up the extra work involved, but they're burning out, really at record levels. And so, that's what's kept it together, I think, is full-time faculty, especially program coordinators. These are the folks who really look at the big picture in a certain program, and they make sure that the industry partners are talked to on a regular basis, and that open house events are coordinated. Like, coordinators do all this stuff, and they're resigning across the system. They're burnt out. So it's really only been able to perpetuate itself at the expense of the sort of dwindling group of full-time faculty.
It's bad enough to have all the stress of part-time employment and the uncertainty of not knowing, what work you're going to be doing in the coming year and the year following. But then the administrative side sounds really scary to me. I mean, I just have trouble picturing this. I mean, a lifetime ago, I was a high school teacher, and I couldn't imagine having to do stuff like that. I mean, it was pretty, when you have full-time staff, it gives you a lot of stability.
It does. And also, I mean, when you talk about the sort of administration in the colleges, there is a certain administrative culture, which I would say is actually profoundly dysfunctional. And this is why such a key demand for us, along with the part-time issue, is academic freedom and collegial governance. And this is basically trying to establish in Ontario colleges what is really the standard all around the world, which is that if you have a post-secondary institution, faculty need the ability to maintain the quality and integrity of their own courses and programs. And then also, you need a body within the institution through which academic policy is made. And that's why, that's why we have senates. The BC colleges they call them academic councils, but they are senates for all intents and purposes. Obviously all of our universities have senates. Sheridan College has a senate. And, we really feel that this is crucial because you have a cost-cutting austerity situation in the colleges in Ontario. A lot of that is because we have the lowest funding for post-secondary out of any other province in Canada. Also, Ontario is rock bottom and has been for quite some time. Because of that, we also have the highest tuition. So our students are paying more tuition than any other students in Canada. And another thing that happens when you have this incredible lack of funding is there's this cost-cutting pressure. And how that's manifesting in academic decisions, some really disturbing things are occurring. Like, for instance, it takes more time to mark an essay as a faculty member. And, that factors into our workload, how much work we can be given and how many courses we can be given. And so if a manager can convince us to just use all multiple choice tests in our courses and not have students do any writing, well, it actually saves the college money. And so we're actually seeing, and again, this is across the system, we're seeing managers directing faculty to not give essays, to not do more intensive evaluations. And this is really, it's freaking faculty members out. I'm sure you can imagine. because our students need to learn how to read and to think and to write. They need to learn how to speak in, you know, publicly. And these sorts of things are being removed from the classroom, basically just because a manager tells you so, because there's a bottom line implication. And right now, we don't have the ability as faculty to stand up to that. And that's why it's such a huge issue for us.
Yeah, well, let's move to the bargaining process. And I gather there is not any bargaining right now because the employer is, they're represented by College Employer Council?
Yes.
And so who comprises that council?
So the College Employer Council is, they're a little bit of a, they're a slippery fish to get a hold of. I mean, they call themselves a nonprofit, and I guess you could almost envision them as a nonprofit, almost sort of like industry association, right? So it's all 24 colleges. The 24 college presidents are, you know, members. They're really the constituents of the College Employer Council. So the College Employer Council gets its direction from all of the senior management in the colleges. And their representative is Don St. Clair. He's the person we've been hearing in the media the most on their side. I can tell you, though, in the bargaining process, how it's played out, it's been the same on day one as it was on the very last day in the evening when we were, I think, as faculty making really serious moves toward a deal. The other side has been the exact same since day one, will not talk about any of the issues, absolutely refuse to even countenance a discussion on any of the key issues, including the zero-cost items. So, to me, it's a little baffling. This is my first time being through the bargaining process, and I kind of thought, all right, well, the no-cost stuff, we'll get some play on that, and then, you know, we'll bicker over the things that will cost money, and that's fully understandable. But it was just, there was nothing from day one. And so they've been stonewalling and now also threatening a long work stoppage, which, again, I think is just really, I think it's ethically dubious. I think they're holding students hostage and just refusing to talk about any of the serious issues that we're raising.
Well, you know, and when they won't even talk about no-cost items, and I could see that, from your side, that if you're delivering a program, my guess is that actually not only would it be no cost, it might be a reduced cost if you had more full-time staff, because then you don't have all that administrative shuffling around that goes on continually.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we like, you know, the no-cost items on the table are, like I said before, the job security or seniority for our part-time folks does nothing to the bottom line of the colleges. In fact, would save money, but I think through more stable staffing. The other no-cost item is academic freedom. They could snap their fingers, give that to us right now, and there's no money, right? That would change hands. But what you're talking about is interesting as well. It's this idea that, you know, getting faculty more involved in academic decision-making and making academic policy, there could be a savings in administration there, quite considerable savings. So, you know, we really see it as just, you know, these proposals being things that would make the system actually, it would modernize it, make it more effective, more functional. There would be savings involved. The one cost would be hiring enough faculty to bring us up to a 50-50 ratio. And we understand that there's money there. But, of course, you know, the college system has been in surplus for the past 10 years. In fact, over the last 10 years, it's accumulated $1.2 billion surplus in the colleges. So, you know, the money's there, you know. And again, I think the province, us being the lowest funded province in Canada, I don't think that's acceptable, you know. So even if the province brought us up to the national average, there would be ample money to cover having staffing at least a 50-50 ratio like we're asking.
Yeah, in fact, you know, 50-50, when, you know, you mentioned BC is 75, you're not asking for the moon here.
No, not at all.
So for them to have made such a hard line, that's hard to comprehend. To me, I keep thinking, you know, you've got the College Employer Council. But you've got above them, you've got the minister. I mean, they get their money. I mean, they get their money and direction from the province. They're a creature of the provincial government.
Yeah, they're still, I mean, you know, sadly, not as much as they were in the beginning. I mean, now the province contributes, I think, just over 40% of the operating revenue to the colleges, whereas it used to be approximately 75% when the colleges were first created. So, I mean, it's gotten that bad in terms of funding, but you are right. The provincial government still has very, very powerful levers that they can use to, you know, to get the employer council to look at these issues seriously and to get a deal done.
Yeah, and you know, the provincial government seems to be talking from both sides of their mouth right now, because they do have some positive initiatives coming in Bill 148.
Yeah.
You know, on working conditions and labor and so on. But, you know, on the other hand, they seem fine to have a high proportion of their community college staff working in precarious employment.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. There's a lot of contradictions at play. And I think, you know, that's why, from our perspective, we're just trying to continually explain the issues, because we understand it's complicated for folks who aren't in the system. A lot of these things can sound a little bit arcane, and the system can be a bit of a black box. I mean, it's funny, the colleges keep trotting out what they call these KPIs, and these are these sort of satisfaction surveys that they do, which are, there's nothing empirically rigorous about these surveys at all. You know, for instance, they have employment data, but it's not about whether a student is employed in their field when they graduate. I mean, they could be employed at Tim Hortons or, you know, a grocery store, and nothing wrong with those jobs. But I mean, you know, the data is not, it's not rigorous, right? You know, so I think at the end of the day, we're trying to explain to people that when you actually look at how the system is running, it really is a system that is fraying, you know? And we've seen the quality. You know, you ask the people who have 20, 25 years experience, it's amazing to walk the line with these folks, and they will say they're out there because they've seen an erosion over that time. But if you're just there for 2 or 3 years as a student, I mean, what you know is what you see, right? And so that's the issue, you know. And even so, you know, we've been hearing student complaints about not being able to, you know, meet with professors and whatnot because they're teaching at three different institutions and they got to fly out of the building as soon as the class.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, again, we're just trying to let people know what's going on in the system and why college faculty are far from radical people. You know, you talk to these people on the line, we're talking nursing professors and technology professors. I mean, these are people, it takes an awful lot to get them riled up and to take a stand. But they're there because of what they've been experiencing. And they're there, they'll say very clearly, they're there for the future generations. They're there for those students who are going through their classes. Will they ever get stable employment, you know? Will they get the quality of education they deserve when they're paying more and more tuition every year? You know, these are the reasons why faculty are out on the picket lines.
Right. And, you know, I was just online. I was looking at the offer, actually, from OPSU.
Yes.
Consistent with what you've been describing. You know, try to get to 50% full time.
Yes.
Again, not asking for the moon. The actual wage increase is just about inflation. That won't even be a catch up there. But the employer has walked away from the table, right?
Yeah, I mean, what they did, you know, from day one, they it was basically, first of all, it was, we don't even want to negotiate at all, we want to extend. Mm-hmm. And so they dropped what they call an extension offer on the table and basically said, take it or leave it, we're not going to do anything else. And then, you know, they did that again in September and said, listen, this is our final offer, take it or leave it. And, you know, the thing that most people don't maybe realize is it's not just that they haven't addressed a single issue we brought up. There's actually serious takeaways in their offer on the table
Oh, wow.
That would devastate our ability to hire full-time to get full-time hired at all. Like, they have this temporary full-time position, which would enable them literally to never have to hire another full-time faculty. And so, you know, this is just how intransigent this employer is. It isn't just that they're following us. They are coming after faculty in a big way in that offer.
Yeah, and you know, presenting a final offer and walking away from the table, that's not bargaining. That's the opposite. So now, I'm just looking at what's going on, I noticed that I guess earlier today there was a rally in front of the minister, Deb Matthews' office. She's Minister of Advanced Education. And there's going to be a rally, I guess, right here at Mohawk on Friday.
There is, yeah. We're calling it the Back to the Table Barbecue because we think the message right now needs to get out both to the College Employer Council and the province to, you know, to get back to negotiating. And so it's happening at the Fennel campus at noon. And it's right at the, I guess, what's sort of the main entrance now at Fennel and Governor's Boulevard.
Right.
And it's where, you know, we had a rally last Friday, and it's at the same location. And last Friday was amazing. There was a lot of solidarity. There was you know, representatives from the Labor Council and from unions throughout the city. And it was amazing to see, and it was really, really wonderful for our members to see that that support and that solidarity.
Yeah, for sure. So I'd encourage our listeners to come out and support your community college workers. A Mohawk, a fine institution. Actually, my son is a graduate there. And so come on out this Friday, October 27th at noon at the main entrance to Mohawk, Governor's Road in Fennel. So anyways, Kevin, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on what's going on with the strike and the bargaining, or the lack thereof. You know that here on Unusual Sources, we are a labor program, and, you know, we certainly hope that we get a fair outcome to this ongoing dispute.
Thanks very much for having the conversation with me, Doug, and I greatly appreciate it, and we hope to see folks on Friday at the rally.
Okay, great. Okay, that was Kevin McKay. He's with OPSU 240 at Mohawk College. He's a professor on faculty there. And he is also on the bargaining team. So, today he spoke to us from Ottawa. But so just mark it on your calendars if you can make it to noon Friday, October 27th, main entrance of Mohawk. There'll be a rally in support of the striking staff at Mohawk.